Welcome back to a new episode of Straight to the Point. Today, I'm really, really excited to introduce one of my amazing business partners. She is one hell of a property investor. She's a trainer, mentor, has a £1 million property portfolio, and someone that's inspired me for the last year and a half that I knew her. And we've got an amazing story about how we've met. Sarah Poynter Ryan, welcome to the Straight to the Point podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Christopher.
How are you? How are things going?
I'm very good, thank you. I'm in the middle of a little refurb on my own house at the moment, so I've been on a roof for 2 days, so I'm pink.
You can't see the video guide actually on this one, but Sarah, I can confirm it's definitely sunburned. I mean, I mean, I'm not too bad myself actually with how my tan's coming along. But Sarah, obviously, I know you really, really well, and we've worked together for I think it's 18 months, nearly 2 years, I think.
Yeah, so we met in September in Ibiza on like the 20th of September 2019. We met.
That was on one of your retreats, wasn't it?
It was indeed.
Yeah, that was one of my favourite stories ever. So I was scrolling through my Instagram messages one day I was actually speaking at an event in Wolverhampton, one of the nicest places in the UK. Apologies for anybody that's from Wolverhampton that might be listening to this. But I was speaking at a women's networking event there, all around like social media and stuff. And I get this random direct message, and it's like, "How would you like to come to Ibiza?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" It's like, "Oh, we've got a free trip to Ibiza. How would you like to come?" And I'm like, "Well, what's the catch? Like, this is random. I've never spoken to this person in my life." And
you have to come and mentor for a week.
That's it. 48 hours later, I was in Ibiza having the time of my life.
Yeah.
And I remember stumbling out of the taxi on the first night, and I just hear this random, "Are you Chris Taylor?" I shouted down the bottom of the road, and me and my business partner at the time were looking around like, "I think so. I think that might be me." And it was Sarah running up and saying, "Oh my God. Thank God you're here."
It was that was our other business partner, Emma, Rika, and I had been out drinking, and you'd arrived quite late. And so we were on our way out to get pizza and sangria because we were like, we had drunk munchies, and there you were, you just appeared. And yeah, "Are you Chris Taylor?" down the street.
It was like the best time ever. And then since then, obviously, me and Sarah have gone on to do a number of different things together, haven't we? It's going. But for the people that are listening, Sarah, add some context to us. Who actually are you? What have you done in the past? Like, what brings you here today?
Okay, so my name's Sarah Poynton, and I think I'm probably best known in the property space. I started my property business about 5.5 years ago, and I started it from a place of debt. I had a business before, which I started, which was a photo booth company. And long story short, it just taught me every way not to run a business. I did everything wrong. All the mistakes you can make in a business, I made every single one of them more than once. And by the time kind of 2014, 2015 came, my business was going bust. I'd financially kind of crumbled. I was about £60,000 in debt, and I really needed to do something different. And I'd heard about rent to rent and deal packaging and things like that. And I thought, do you know what? If other people are doing it, let's give it a shot. Let's see. The turning point for me, I was listening to some guy, some guru, let's call it. And he was saying that he was a millionaire from property, and he didn't use any of his own money and all these sorts of things. And I thought, if this guy can do it, then I am in for, there's hope for me yet, right? And that was generally my mindset on it. Since then, I now know who he is, and I was right to have that opinion. Like, he's not a good guy, let's just say. Bit of a crook.
It's what we call a dodgy geezer.
He's just a crook, and yeah. So anyway, that the less said about that, the better. So I went on to kind of start my business. I got myself a mentor who I will be forever grateful for, because without having the guidance from somebody who'd done it before me, I'm not sure I would have done what it is that I've gone on and done. And so I got myself a mentor. I started work. And I mean, I worked hard. Like, I really want to, I always am very honest in when I talk about business, like, yes, okay, I have a fantastic business, and yes, okay, my life is good and financially I'm good and all these things, but it's took like long hours, hard work, bumps in the road to get there. So I started with Rent to Rent. My first ever property deal was Rent to Rent in the December of 2015 is when I signed the contracts, 23rd of December, 2015. And then the following year, 2016, I discovered deal packaging, which is portfolio building for other people. For those of you that aren't in the property space, it's where I basically become an extension of your team and I go shopping with your money for houses. Basically is what we do, which is a great job to have, by the way. Shopping with other people's money for houses is an excellent job. And it created a really solid business for me as well. So in my first 12 months, like 2016, my first full 12 months, I built £100,000. In my first 23 months, I managed to clear my £60,000 of debt. And it's all just kind of roller coastered from there, really. I still have a portfolio building company. We still work with investors to build portfolios, but we do all sorts of stuff now, not just the kind of rent to rent side of things. I have my own buy to let portfolio now as well. I have a rent to rent business as well. I've got a traditional lettings management company as well that I launched in 2020. And I have an education company and part own a marketing agency as well. So I do all sorts of things. I very much now kind of a moving, I say now, but probably in the last 12 months, moving more into business ownership rather than doing the doing, if it makes any sense. I love having multiple streams of income. And I think it's multiple streams of income that saved me in COVID and allowed me to trade through it without furloughing a member of team, without losing a member of staff, still being able to pay every single bill, not having to take any breaks. It was that multiple streams of income that kind of saved my bacon then. And so yeah, it's been a crazy 5 years. I wasn't expecting it. I still wake up some days and think, how on earth did I get here? Like what is happening? Like it happens all the time.
I think it's really, really, it's such a cool story. I mean, we've spoken about this a lot, right? And the thing that I think is really, really clear with you is that you'll never give up. And that's something that I obviously admired about you when I first met you. It was the fact that, like, no matter what happens, there's always an opportunity to move forward. There's always the opportunity to kind of take that next step and make progress if you want it enough. And that's the thing, right? You have sheer drive. There's no, if anyone just spends like 20 minutes in the room, it's like, how do we conquer the world? It's those sorts of conversations that happen. It's no petty little tea talk going on, right?
I think I am driven, very naturally driven, but I'm driven. I've not always been driven from a really positive place. Like there's definitely been a period in my life where I've been driven from a very negative place, where it was actually being driven out of stubbornness and a place of I had to prove a point. Whereas now I think as I've got older and I've started to realize that you cannot actually be happy, healthy and successful if you're driven from a place of negativity to prove something to someone else. Like you have to be driven by, or for me anyway, you have to be driven from a place that actually satisfies you. Otherwise it's a really conflicting headspace to be in. And I think, yeah, you could probably say I'm made of pretty tough stuff. Like my whole life I've been through reasonably like bumpy stuff before business and my when I was younger and all sorts of stuff. And I think you probably could say driven and resilient are two things that I 100% am. Not on all days though, you know, I think like everybody, any people listening to this, you look at people who are successful often and you think bloody hell, they're positive all the time and their energy is always at 10. And like, actually like anybody else, I have days where I think, what on earth am I doing? Like, why am I even bothering? What's the point of it all? But yeah, like I think one of my favorite things to do is to dissect stuff and put it back together in a way that makes logical sense for scaling or for growth for me. And doing that with other people is also something that I really enjoy. So yeah, there's always an idea floating around or a new interest or something that's kind of being added to my ideas board.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think it's opportunity like lights us up. And that's something like what you spoke about there about being driven from, I guess, the stubbornness and proving people wrong. Like that's probably the journey is like self-discovery that I'm on at the moment, right? So I've only been in business for 3 years. It's been like a rapid, rapid time. And there's been so many ups and downs like along that period, right? And I think back to like what motivates me. And to be honest, like it always has been, like proving myself to someone, like whether it's been my dad when I was first younger, whether it's been like to the schoolmates that were never actually mates that used to pretend that they were, sort of thing, and go, you know what, screw you. But that's always been something that's motivated me. And it's like whenever I'm in that period where I guess I can't be bothered, I think about those moments and you go, you know what, like use that energy to get going. But you are right. Like I've had it even over the last few days, and we're going through a big like transformational period in our business right now, right? And I'm sitting here and I'm like, why on earth am I doing this? Mm-hmm. I really have, like, there's self-doubt that comes even when I think you reach any level of success, right? You always have this thing in your head which is like, mm-hmm. why am I putting myself through this shit? Because mm-hmm. like, let's be honest, let's not beat around the bush here, and people make business seem like all about Lamborghinis and private jets. It's fucking hard. Like, yeah, it's seriously hard.
Am I allowed to swear? I've been trying not to swear. Great.
Oh, excellent. I swear now all the time. I'm a nightmare.
I never know what's allowed on podcasts. So I think there is a common misunderstanding in entrepreneurship, should we say, in inverted commas, is that you become an entrepreneur and all of a sudden you have choice and freedom and all of these things. And I think often I look at people and I think you're just fucking deluded if you think that you can quit your job with, most people quit their job without any sort of buffer as well, without any kind of like, you know, I would say to quit your job comfortably, you want to have a year's worth of money, like either or be generating that as recurring income, like guaranteed recurring income every month. You can't just quit your job and be a gazillionaire overnight without working. And I am definitely not a 5 a.m. clubber. I'm not a hustle 24 hours a day type advocate. I'm really not. I think you should get up when you want to get up and go to bed when you want to go to bed and do what works for you, because
have a hot shower, for God's sake.
Like, it's okay to have a warm shower. You don't have to be getting in an ice bucket every morning, like, to be successful. This is not the only way. It works for some people. It doesn't work for everybody. Some mornings I get up at 5. Some mornings I train. Some mornings I lay in bed till 9 o'clock, drinking coffee, working in my pajamas till 10. Like, some days I do not get up at 5, and I'm totally all right with that. It doesn't make me any less successful than other people and or any more successful than other people. It just is what's right for me. But I think there's definitely a misconception that business is easy. And I honestly think there's a degree of responsibility on people in my space and the wider kind of education space, the personal development space, where we put all of the responsibility on other people to say, well, if you're not successful, it's your own fault. You're not working hard enough. Not actually true. It might be that you just don't know how to do the thing. Like, you haven't learned how to do the thing yet. It might be that you actually are not a good salesperson, and so sales isn't what you should be doing. Like, maybe you should have an online business instead of a customer facing sales job, do you not, or role in your business. I think one of the things that people kind of rush to be able to do is exactly the same as what other people are doing, when actually it's all right to step back and say, well, what are my skills? What am I good at? What do I actually enjoy? There's a difference between being wealthy and being fulfilled in life. And this is something, like you just said, at the different levels, we all go through this transformation. You know, for me, the first transformation was like billing my first pound and making sure they had enough money to pay my bills. And then my next transformation happened at the point that I was clearing my debt. And my next transformation happened when I was getting to like 5-figure months. And then my next transformation, and every time you kind of hit this ceiling that you weren't expecting to ever even get to, you go through this weird head wobble phase. And I think I'm definitely in the middle of one of these at the minute, because we're punching, you know, it's uncomfortable for me to say it, like, I'm still definitely dealing with this in my head, but we are in 7 figures, like, and I never ever thought that I would clear my debt. Like, I don't know how it's happened. I mean, I do know how it's happened. Hard work is how it's happened. But at the same time, I wasn't expecting it. And I think we go through this transformation in the work that we're doing, but also in the headspace that we are in when we're alone with our thoughts. That is one of the biggest things that will either see you succeed or see you fail, is what is happening in your head when you're trying to get to sleep, when you are sitting quietly with a cup of tea, like in those quiet moments, if you can't control the not letting it overwhelm you, if you can't really rationalize, if you allow yourself to be emotionally consumed, then business is a really hard place to be.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that, actually. I think it's critical for people to understand it. And you touched on something there, which I'd like to dive a little bit deeper into, actually, is the hard work thing. Mm-hmm. And I hear people talk about this all the time, and it wasn't where you were going with it, but I'm going to take it there anyway, because people always say that hard work is the actual secret to success, right? That's the thing. You just got to work hard. And I was actually just reading a book, which is, I can't remember what the actual name of it. I'll link it in the comments for people to find it, but it's like working hard versus working smart, basically. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've noticed since working with you is that you seem to always know the next step. And even if you don't know it, you find someone else that does know the next step to be able to move forward. In terms of working hard, you, I believe, work hard on the right things. And what I think would be really, really good to kind of go into is, how do you actually work out what the right and the wrong things are? Where should you actually be spending your time?
So honestly, I wish I could say to you, there's, you go through this process and the answers become clear. The right and the wrong things will be determined by, or for me anyway, they're determined by where my energy is good. So I know that when I'm frustrated about something, usually that frustration comes from the fact that it's something I either don't enjoy doing, or it's something that I don't know how to do. And so really, I probably shouldn't be doing it anyway. My brain never stops, like ever. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing or what, but I haven't quite decided that yet. But the reason I tend to always know the next step is because I've spent years battering myself in my own head that it's not enough. And so what's actually happened is me being pretty hard on myself to achieve the things I wanted to achieve, sometimes in not a very positive or healthy way, sometimes in quite a toxic way, I've actually taught myself to think ahead all the time. Like, what if, what if, what if, what if? And I've always got a, what if this happens, what if that happens? The way I set goals is really not a healthy way, really. Like, it's not a way that I would encourage other people to set goals, because I set goals knowing full fucking well that they're not achievable. Like, I know that when I set it, but I'm all right with that, because I actually also then don't crumble when I fail. I'm not somebody that really is that impact. Like, I get upset if I don't hit target, but it doesn't consume me or destroy me for weeks on end, months on end, right? So I think I know the next step, because often the next step is the target I missed the time before. Mm. Does that make sense? So quite often I'm driven by what I didn't achieve before. In terms of business as well, I think it's really easy to become complacent when things are working. And I'm a firm believer that success is a shit teacher. When things are going well, it probably needs to be adjusted. Because if things are going smoothly, then at some point in the future, the way people consume, the way people buy, the way that people, when you're in a service-based industry like I am anyway, the needs of the consumers is evolving all the time. And we have to think end game. Like, it's not, business isn't actually about us. It's not about money. It's not about how we, the fact that we can buy the house, we can do the thing. It's not about that. Business is about what we achieve and contribute to the clients that we serve in our business. If we, like, our tenants is a group of people that we serve, their needs have evolved over the last 18 months, even working from home, they need different Wi-Fi, all of this sort of stuff. If we just kind of sat and done nothing to our lettings business, like our rent to rent business, our tenants would all be leaving now, because other houses have all got gigafast and they've upgraded this and they've created office spaces in there, like in dwellings and stuff like that. We've had to do that to stay on track with the market. And so I think the best way to be able to be one step ahead, or at least what in line with the steps, is to be thinking about your customer more than you're thinking about yourself. And then actually the answers are given to you on a plate. Like, we know that tenants want to live in houses that have gigafast, that have working space, that have lit, like communal areas that have got garden space now. Like, so when we're targeting our portfolios, we're not targeting like tower block flats anymore, because people don't want to be in them. People want to be where there's green space. People want to be in like open environments. And so by thinking what our client needs, actually it leads the company pretty well.
I think you're right. And then for me, that like is also not just business development, but it's sales in the same time, right? And I think actually what you've said there, it's just clicked as to why you sell so well. Like, I've seen you on the phone with people, right? And we agree on this. Selling isn't actually selling in like the grand scheme, the dirty word that people put it in the position of. Like, it is just identifying a potential problem that someone has that you can solve, and then providing the value to help solve the problem in exchange for currency, right? I mean, is that do you believe, in terms of the way that you've been able to scale quickly, I may add, like you've done it at speed, is it having that mentality, like people call it that serving versus selling mentality, right? They go into that. Do you think that that's been one of the reasons why you've been able to scale so quickly, your ability to be able to identify problems and solve them?
I think sales for some reason is a dirty word. Sales is the lifeblood of every business. Without sales, you're dead in the water. Like, you have to sell. And people that are uncomfortable selling need to be comfortable selling. Like, it's just something that everybody needs to be able to do. But I think what happens is people misunderstand what sales actually is. Sales is just a pattern of language. It's actually just a series of words that either conflict or connect, right? If you actually listen to what your clients are telling you, and I don't mean just listen with the intent of responding, I mean actually hear what they're saying, what they need, what their challenge is, then it's likely, if you're in the same space and your service like provides a solution for that, there'll be a way of you explaining what it is that you do that connects. That's just language, that's just words. And often if you use people's language like back to them, if you work with their patterns, they will connect with it more. If you can demonstrate that what you actually provide solves that problem for that person, people buy. And people don't buy based on price. We as human beings, we do not buy pricing. Very rarely. We do in some cases, but like really, really in a service-based business, we don't, right? People don't buy what you do either. They don't buy what you do. People buy the way you make them feel. Yeah. If you can solve a problem for them, you can help them pay their mortgage down. You can help them clear their debt. You can help them do something tangible in their life, right? So that it impacts them in a positive way and they can see it, that you can actually be that person or that business or that service or that product. They will buy it. Right, there's a reason why we spend £2,000 on an Apple Mac laptop versus £400 on a Dell. It's because I know that if my computer breaks, I can walk into Apple and I get the service. I don't buy the computer. I buy the service and the way it makes me feel when I'm a client. The price is irrelevant then. And so I think when people think about sales, they go into this, I have to sell. I have to tell them to buy. Well, actually, it doesn't work like that anymore. The way that consumers consume, that's not, people are more intelligent than that, right? So instead, if we just listen with the intention of hearing and then showing them how we solve that problem, then people will buy. There's a degree of like personal circumstances. There's a degree of making sure that you connect on a personal level with someone if you're a person-based business. But ultimately, if you can make people realize, people only buy for certain reasons, right? They buy because they are, whatever it is, it's going to make them increase in status, yeah? It's going to keep them alive, yeah? It's going to make them feel good, or it's going to get them laid. These are the only reasons that people buy anything. If you think about it, right? It's the only reason that anyone buys anything. So if you can connect with one of those four things, if your service or product helps them to increase their status, helps them to eat and stay alive and pay their bills and stuff like that. You know, any of those four things, the people will buy it. There's a need. If there's a need, it can be sold, but it can't be sold unless you listen. And so it just always comes back to listening. And I think the difference between me as a businesswoman now than the businesswoman I was when I had my first business is that back then I was obsessed with billing for the sake of me. I wanted to make money for me. The second I stopped worrying about chasing money and I started worrying about my client and their experience and their need, my bank balance changed. And genuinely, that is like a really important part, I think, of the difference between I'm still the same human being. You know, I haven't particularly changed. I've not done huge amounts of studying or gone away and kind of found myself or anything like that. I'm still the same person. I just focus on a different thing now. And my first business went bust, and this group of companies, touch wood, is growing.
I think I think in terms of that connection factor, right? Like, I always think about it like just like two magnets. You put two magnets together, and if you're both going at each other, you're always going to repel, you're always going to push away. But if you can find a way just to rotate slightly and actually start to ask questions which bring people closer towards you and actually showcase, like we call it the trusted advisor role, right? For me, the best thing that I could ever do is put myself in a position, especially like whenever I'm competing against other people that may do similar services, is actually go, you know what does the client actually need here? Do they actually need my service? If they do, then what I basically need to be able to show them is that the way that we do things is going to get them the best result. And if it doesn't, make them aware of that and actually then showcase and push them forward. And for me, that one piece of acknowledgement there, because you can generate revenue, right? Even if the customer's not right. I'll hold my hands up. I've done it in the past where the customer's not been the exact fit, but I've needed revenue and I've done it, right? I've been able to secure the deal and it's not gone the way that I wanted it to. But ever since I started to what I call grow a proper business, it's been about actually identifying what are the actual pains and problems this customer is experiencing or potential customers experiencing, and can I solve them? If I can solve them, it's my duty to connect with them in the way so they can see with complete clarity how I'm going to do that or how our business is going to do that. If I can't, it's about finding them the next best thing. And that single thing there has been a complete game changer for us in terms of it. And I know you've got similarities in that sort of thing, right?
Yeah. I think it's really important. It's all right to say, do you know what? We don't do that. And I'm not the right person to help you with that thing. Like the education company that I have, so Cogito Wealth, we've got a really clear like rule, which is one, if we actually don't do it, don't say we do. Simple. Like we don't teach development. Right, we don't pretend to teach development. I'm not a developer, so I don't pretend to teach it. Right, I don't mislead anyone to say that I will teach them that just to get their money. I'd say, and I recommend, there's another company that I fully recommend, and they're the mentors that I used for my development journey. Right, so I don't think it's a problem to say, do you know what, we don't do this bit of what you're trying to do, but these people do, because then what happens is they will also say, well, we don't do deal packaging, but Sarah does. Do you know what I mean? And there's no agreement, there's no official thing, but there's no reason why you shouldn't. There's plenty of business out there for everybody. Try to be like locked in and screw every single penny out of every single deal for ourselves. It's the wrong, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not sustainable long term.
Yeah, it all comes down, I think, and I think this is actually looking at Strategy Hub and the way that you've done Cogito Wealth, right? You're so clear on what you do. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, is actually what, I'm not going to say 99% because I always say, I reckon about 70, 80% of businesses, this is the people that aren't scaling right now, that are struggling right now. It's because they're not 100% clear on what they offer. And to be able to sell something, you need to know what you do and what problems you solve, right? And I think probably something to actually quite talk about, because getting clear on your offer sounds so easy, doesn't it? Oh, just get clear on what you sell. But actually, in the grand scheme of things, it can be quite hard for people to be able to find it.
People decide what service they want to sell and what product they want to sell, but they don't actually decide what solution they want to sell. Does that make sense? So like, let's take the Cogito Wealth, the education company, for a second, right? I notice that there's a big gap in our space for implementation, right? Most people who are in the property space who've spent any sort of money on education, of which I know there'll be a lot of people listening to this, have spent 25 to 35 grand with one of the big education companies, and they've learned a lot of theory, and that's great. But then they're on their own at home trying to figure out what to do next, in what order, and who to say what to, and what bit of paper goes with what situation. And there's so many different like anomalies in property. They're stuck and they're not getting anything back on that 25 to 35,000 pound investment that they've made. So for me, I don't do courses. I don't do training. That's not what we do. Kajito does implementation and accountability. Take everything you've learned and actually start implementing it with access to me every day to help you to do that. And when you start, for me, I never wanted to sell. I don't want to go up against the big boys. Like, I don't want to be charging people 30 grand. That's not the space I want to be in. It just isn't. I think if you've got 30 grand, buy a house with it. Don't spend it on training. That is genuinely my like answer when people say, I've got 30,000 pounds, what should I do? Definitely don't spend it on training. Definitely buy an asset with it. Like, do something with it that's tangible. But at the same time, people do need help and support and mentorship and guidance and mindset support and all of these things. So that's the kind of gap that Kajito covers. All I wanted to do was to create a resource that people could come to get help to implement. And actually, there was a clear need, because we've now got hundreds of clients who are all members of that community. We did a poll on it. It's like 96% have spent big, big money elsewhere, come and worked with me, and we charge £191 a month, right? And in the first couple of months have done a deal that they haven't done spending 30 grand elsewhere. And so because we just focus on accountability, implementation and results, and not training courses and events and all of this sort of stuff, we decided what we wanted to do. We decided that we wanted to do it in an online environment so that we could work on a like study at your own pace basis, because everybody's doing things differently. And it's worked because there was a massive gap. And I think that from a Kajito perspective, like, we did the old way. We did the way, like, the 1-day events, the 3-day events, the mastermind events and stuff like that. I didn't personally enjoy them. So I stopped doing them. I think in business, it's all right to listen to your inner narrative. And it's all right to say, it worked for me a minute ago, but it's not working for me now. And it's okay to change. That was a big realization for me. That was a big kind of crossroads point. Realizing that just because I said yes at some point doesn't mean I still have to say yes today. But yeah, I think once you've decided on the solution that you want to offer, I'm kind of deviating a little bit here, but once you decide on a solution that you offer, it's easy to show that to people. And if that offer solves for them, why wouldn't they buy it? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, totally. I think that's like the confidence also in your ability to deliver the service, which is the implementation and the accountability, right? Now, you've technically built a £1 million offer now, technically, with the way that it's gone, like, in terms of the way Strategy Hub is going. It's incredible, like, the growth that you've gone through. And to turn that, I remember when we were first coming up, you first came up with that idea. And that was when, like, I remember sitting there in your office, brainstorming, going through, whiteboarding it all up. For those of you that don't know, I'll be surprised if by the end of this year, every wall in Sarah's house isn't whiteboarded, because it is literally her life, how she does things. But I remember doing it.
I call it my brain. I'm literally sitting here looking at it. So it's in my office, and you can get it from B&Q. It's £35 for a tin of paint. And it's whiteboard paint, and I basically paint the whole, I don't just buy a little whiteboard because it's never enough space. So I just paint the whole of my walls in my office, and I call it my brain, because I'm a very visual person. So having a space to go, right, I need to get it out of my head and into something that I can see, means partly it helps me to avoid overwhelm, because when you have a brain that's as busy as mine with so many different, you know, I've got like 5 different companies now. They all need marketing. They all need budgeting. They all need sales. They all need recruitment. They all need all of these things. And when you're trying to sleep at night, when you've got all of this stuff ticking around in your head, actually, it can be quite messy. It feels quite overwhelming sometimes. So having a whiteboard to just scribble all down on, that's my way of being able to release the vent in my head a little bit. And yeah, it gets up on the wall, photos get taken, it either gets filed in an ideas box or it gets developed as a business, one or the other.
I love that. And the thing is, that's I've seen it. Like, I'm literally like being in the room, seeing you go through that process, it's just like totally inspiring in the way that you do it. I absolutely love that. And what I wanted to quickly just touch upon, right, because I think we've got a lot of people that listen. I've had the amount of direct messages that I've had recently just kind of going in about how to get started, what are the first steps. And do you know what, like, I haven't really done a podcast which talks about it at all yet, and I want to do more of them. But I'd love to get your off, because you've done this, what, how long Strategy Hub been going for now in total?
Strategy Hub was born out of COVID and need, actually, because we were an event, Cogito Wealth was an events company before that. We did event-based learning, and honestly, I was doing events-based learning because that's what everyone was doing. That just was the way that it was done, and I never wanted to, don't fix it if it's not broken, right? Hmm. In kind of the back end of 2019, so pre-COVID, sort of the mid-2019 to the end of 2019, it was becoming evident to me that delivering masterminds in the way that everybody else was delivering was a really toxic place for my, like, mental health. Like, I was really unhappy doing it. We were good at it, but it wasn't, I wasn't happy in my life. And whilst we were making good money, we were getting good results for people. I think you also have to be okay to say, do you know what? It's not just about money. Again, I mentioned this earlier, there's a difference between living a fulfilled life and a wealthy life, right? And one of the things I realized when I was young, when I was younger, I'm not even that old, I keep saying when I was younger, but a few years ago.
Back in my day.
Back in the old days. I was so focused around money and building a life where I didn't have to worry about money, and building a business where I didn't have to worry about money, and blah, blah, blah. And now I've got that, you know, I live a really low maintenance life. Like, I could easily, Andy and I, between us, we could easily live on $5,000 a month or less. Like, we don't have an expensive life. And so then you start looking at, well, I mean, you've earned $5,000 a month since almost the first year. Why are you working so hard? And it's actually, I focused a lot on billing, like, grow the business, scale the business, have a big business, have a giant business. That's really exciting, and the energy and all that sort of stuff. And so I got to a point at the back end of 2019 where I realized that, well, I started to realize, but it's taken me probably a year longer, because this is, I've been working on this a lot recently, probably the last 6 months or so. But the back end of 2019, I was like, I'm wealthy, I've got money, but I'm miserable. What's the point? What's the point of having stuff and money, especially if you've got nobody to share it with, because you've alienated all the people in your real life because you've been so focused on making money and building a business so you haven't got to worry about it. Like, so the back end of 2019, I was in like a bit of a crossroads, and I could have gone either way. It was either a carry on as you are, but keep making like a lot of money, or actually stop doing what you're doing completely and reset. And I decided to do that. And it was really scary at the time. There were some business relationships that needed to go as well. Like, they weren't particularly healthy for me. And that was hard in itself. And then the beginning of 2020, it felt like everything was kind of going to come together okay, and we turned a corner, and da, 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 and then COVID hit. And so I'm like wrapping up the kind of hangover of me feeling shit at the end of 2019 and just trying to deal with all of that. And then COVID hit, and I've got, right, we've got events. I think we had something like $50,000 worth of like money in the bank that was for events that we then couldn't deliver. We then had to give that money back, which obviously, because my way of being in business is that it's not fair to keep people's money. Like, it's just not the right way to do it. And we don't spend it until it's ours anyway. Like, it sits in a space. Once the event's delivered, then it's ours to spend, right? So we ended up having to give a lot of money back. Some people just left it on account because they wanted to do one-to-one with me later, and some did digital instead and whatever. But I needed a fix, basically, because we had a big business that we'd switched off a load of stuff because of the changes that I wanted to make. And then we kind of got to March, and I was like, huh, we actually have got no events now for the rest of the year. whilst my property business didn't really get impacted, touch wood again, like we've had a couple of tenants furloughed, but that's actually it. So my property businesses were fine and bubbling along. We were in the middle of trying to sell some property at that point, and that all kind of got kiboshed because no one was buying. It all just kind of slowed down. So that was, we were trying to deal with that. And then it was this, what do we do about the events company? People still wanted to work with me. People still had the need. People were also at home with loads of time to build their businesses like they'd never had before. We had an opportunity. And so the strategy hub was actually an idea that was born out of me getting drunk in the garden in the sun in the April of 2020. And I remember texting you and Emma at the time saying, I'm going to do a 5-day challenge all about investors. And off the back of the 5-day challenge, I think I'm going to open like an online implementation resource. I have no idea what it's going to be called yet, but I'm doing the 5-day challenge in 14 days. Help. And I then took 14 days and we built, marketed and promoted, launched and ran the first 5-day challenge inside of 14 days of my idea. And then we had the first intake into the strategy hub. And since then we've literally just done our fifth intake. They're all joining this week. And it works and people are getting results. The results are like out of this world. And the business that it's created is an online community. And it's from a personal perspective, I think the strategy hub helped me to stay focused in 2020 when it would have been really easy for me to become unfocused because of just, again, like everybody, I had a really turbulent year personally in 2020. There was a lot going on in my personal world, people like family not being well, relationships breaking down, all sorts of stuff that was going on. It would have been easy for me to just kind of not do anything. Instead, I had the strategy hub. It kept me focused, and the results that people are getting just made me want to fight more for that. And so I love it. I absolutely love doing it. It's also allowed me the freedom to get back to running my property businesses more closely because it's an online resource and not events. It's actually a lot less time consuming. So for 2019, for a lot of that, I was just doing events and I wasn't doing huge amounts of property. Whereas now I'm back doing loads of property whilst also having my education company that I own and lead, but I don't run. Like I'm not doing the day in, day out. Like my team, who are just fucking incredible. Like I couldn't do it without them. Like they absolutely need a little shout out because without them, I wouldn't have been able to do what we've done in the last year or 18 months or so. And what I plan to do in the next couple of years, I need them. And, you know, we are a team of people who collectively are making some pretty magic stuff happen, which I'm very proud of.
That's word. I was so hoping you were going to say that word at the end, proud, right? And I want to link this all around. There's a reason why I kind of set these questions up in the way that I did, because for me, like building something that you're proud of is something I think epitomizes you as an individual, right? Like if you're all in, you're all in without a shadow. But then also if you're all out, it's like, I'm all out now. I need to get, and I think we'll talk about this before we finish up, between the fulfilled life and the wealthy life, because I think that has something quite a lot to do with this. But people have this fear of selling, right? This fear of selling. And it's something that I'm coming across a lot of at the moment is, Chris, look, like I need to make revenue, but I don't know how. Like I'm really, really struggling to sell. And I'm like, well, what's the product that you're building? What's the service that you're building? And they'll come to me and they'll start listing out all the features and benefits of the product. And I'm like, well, are you proud of what you've currently built? Like, do you really, really believe that it can generate a result for people? And the answer is probably not. And I think this is the thing, right? Like I have no fear of selling anymore, because for me, selling isn't selling. It's problem solving, like we spoke about previously. And if you're struggling right now to get that offer out there, to get that product and service out there, for me, it comes down to asking yourself, really, really clearly, what problems, what pains are you trying to solve for your dream clients that you're going to work with? And then build something that you cannot ever be more proud of in your life. Like fundamentally throw everything that you've got into it. Because as soon as you do that, the passion, the enthusiasm, everything that we buy when we're looking at somebody to work with, especially in this industry, for me, suddenly all those barriers go. And I've seen so many different transformations, but I'm so glad that you said it, because for me, like, when I see you on the Q&As, when I see you delivering, like, I remember you recording all the training videos in your office where you're sitting now. Like, you put in the hours because you knew that if you did that, you were going to build something that was like, I'm here now, this is it, this is my baby. And it becomes your child, doesn't it? Your business becomes your child. So for me, completely epitomizes you, like the proudness of building products and services.
Yeah, and I mean, since being in business, I've had businesses that I've not been proud of. And not because they were right or wrong, but they just weren't really me. They were for money instead of for satisfaction, I suppose. The Strategy Hub, the version of Kajito Wealth that exists today, I'm incredibly proud of. I love it. The businesses that I have in property, I'm incredibly proud of. But I think there's one thing that everybody needs to remember, and I guess just a degree of wisdom, I suppose, from experience that I could share, is there's a difference between a business that is successful as far as your accounts are concerned, like as far as your bank balance is concerned, and a business that's successful in giving you the life that you actually want. So one of the things that I definitely have struggled with, and I don't mind being open about this, I think more people need to be aware of it, that it's coming, and or that it does come unless you keep an eye on it, is that billing for the sake of billing often just leaves you with a really empty feeling. So I remember my first £100,000 day, and I thought when I wrote that down as a goal, bill £100,000 a day, oh my God, it'd be amazing. And this was, and I'll feel really excited and it'll be this energy and all of this stuff. And should I tell you what I felt the day I billed £100,000? Cool. Empty, unsatisfied, nothingness. It was nothing. It was, I'd achieved a thing that was good that most people don't achieve.
Why do you think that is though? Why?
Because I was so focused around the money, and I was in at that time, I'd forgotten about setting goals that were more about who I am as a person and my purpose in life. And I was setting goals about money and billing. And it was get to the number, not why. Why that number? No one needs to bill £100,000 in a day. I didn't need to do that. It was, people listening to this are going to think you're such a wanker because you're so like nonchalant about the fact that it's, but honestly, I know I'm fully aware how much money that is. Like, it is an astronomical amount of money. But when you get to that level and it's all it creates is an emptiness, then you need to check in with yourself, because it means you are not on the right path to stay in a healthy headspace. So for me, that's something that I'm doing now. I'm checking back. I'm taking time out. Like, we're not doing another intake into the Strategy Hub for probably 6 months because I need time in my house and on my property businesses. I'm like trying to move into more development stuff. I'm buying another company at the moment. Like, there's new business partnerships. There's my friends who haven't seen me, or my family who haven't seen me or heard from me for a year because I've had my head down, like, so deep in work. Actually, I've realized now that once your debt's gone, once you've paid for your life, once you've created a position where you are comfortable and you've got like the extras in life as well, then you really have to remember to set goals that are aligned with who you are and the purpose and contribution to the world you want to make, versus just pounds and pence, because money for the sake of money is just really fucking empty. It's actually not something that's a positive motivator at all, from where I'm sat anyway.
No, I actually agree with you, right? So I went through a similar position, but like, we were doing amazingly well that first 18. You experienced it. You lived it with me, right? You saw what I went through, right? I
remember every minute of your craziness in the last couple of years. Like, you've gone up and down and up and down, as have we both. Mm. And again, like, I've seen the lows for you, and you know, you and I have had private conversations where I've had a little cry, or you've had a little cry, or one of us is like, we're both having little life wobbles. It happens. And but you've done really well to kind of navigate the turbulence that has been, and I think you are still doing really well, Chris.
We've just got such an amazing journey. Like, for me, it's like, so with the world opening back up again, like, I'm sitting here like, I've spoken about this actually on the show before, right? A couple of months ago, I was sitting here and I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, I don't know whether, like, how much I can do with this anymore. I'm sitting in my house, staring at the same four walls. I can't see anybody. And January, I'm like, what on earth am I doing?
I hit this weird headspace in January 21. I think a lot of my friends who are, like, in jobs and stuff like that had a real wobble mid-2020. All the entrepreneurs that I know had their heads so deep in survival in 2020. They got to 2021 and thought, oh, that's it now. We're coming out of it's going to be all right. And then when they locked us down again after Christmas, some of the strongest minded, successful human beings that I know took this weird plummet into a really dark space for a little minute. Me included. Like, January was horrible for me. I really wasn't in a good space in January at all. I think entrepreneurs just got there late. I think everybody's been through the weird COVID headspace. But I think people who run their own businesses just got there later than everybody else.
I agree with you. I think it's, January was, it's weird because I had the same thing. A couple of people do the exact same thing. Like January 21, just, God, it was so weird. So now, like, sun's back out. I'm recording this. I'm about to go and sit in the sun for an hour and just chill for a little bit, right? Because it's been manic these last few days. But it's just nice to come out of it and just see, like, again, countless opportunity to be able to do it. And I know you're talking about kind of like finding that balance between wealth and fulfillment. I mean, what is next for you? What is the game plan?
So we've just had an intake into the Strategy Hub. So I'm going to spend the next 6 months like really head down with them, getting them results, making sure that they are all building businesses that are sustainable, profitable, and real, tangible businesses, not just theoretical businesses. So that's the focus from that point. And we're not going to do another intake until probably December or the new year. Client said to me the other day, well, why not? Surely you've got to do it. No, actually, I don't have to do anything because I'm my own boss and I'll do what I want when I want to do it. So I'm going to do that with the Strategy Hub. But what that's going to give me is some freedoms to be able, from time perspective, to be able to concentrate very heavily on my property business. So I'm in the middle of negotiating I say that with my fingers crossed, like middle of negotiating a 10-bed estate in the Cotswolds that we're trying to buy at the moment, which will be run as a real high-end wedding venue. So we're in the process of doing that. If I get that, we will know within the next 4 weeks whether they get that over the line or not. If we get that, when we get that, let's try and use good language. When we get that, that will spin my energy in a slightly different direction for the next 6 months, because it will be about setting up high-end corporate relationships with suppliers and all of that sort of stuff. So that will be really exciting, something brand new. So I'm excited about that. And also development. So we've got offers out on developments of like flats and apartments, commercial to resi stuff. We've got a pub conversion. So everything for me is about, it's going to be about property for a minute. I think in terms of like long-term, my own kind of buy-to-let wealth type stuff, I'm still ticking along in the background. I invest quite heavily in a fund as well. So all the money that I make, just putting there to try and make it into more money. I think getting to a point probably before, I'm 40 in a couple of years. And yeah, I know. So I always said I wanted to be able to retire when I was 30. I missed that boat by some stretch. I don't think I'll ever retire, but I'd like to be able to sit down when I'm 40 and decide, what are we doing now? What's the plan? It might just be that I end up renovating my home because we're in like, it's a 200-year-old house and it needs like everything to do. But I think honestly, if I had to summarize what's coming next for me, I feel like I've got some space and I'm very grateful that I have the businesses that afford me time and space to be able to decide what it is I want to actually do next. But also I think working on my own purpose as a human being a little bit more, because I've been so focused around the business and building the financials of the business to sustain jobs and all that sort of stuff. I've definitely been guilty of forgetting about myself for a minute. So I've got marathons to train for and I need to get back in the gym, get rid of these chubby cheeks again. Like
you and me both.
I've got some lockdown timber that seems to have attached itself to my face, which I'm not massively happy about. And so I think what's next for me is actually a period of time, a little chapter that's actually more about Sarah and my family and my friends and my marriage and all the other things that includes. And yeah, I'm not going to call it a break because it won't be, but I feel like there's not pressure on me right now to chase growth. I feel like I'm in a place where actually I'm quite comfortable just being.
I love it. So refreshing to hear. Like literally the change in like 2 years, isn't it? It's like, it's absolutely crazy. Like it may, like genuinely insane to see. Sarah, for people that want to get in touch with you, where can people find you?
So Instagram's a good place to find me. Thanks to Christopher Taylor, obviously, because I don't even use my Instagram until I met Chris. But also, you know, you can email the office at any time, which is learn@cogito-wealth.co.uk. I'm doing a lot of like podcast interviews at the minute, and I'm like, there's a lot of stuff going around my, let's call it personal brand side of things, because I want to do a lot of speaking next year. So anyone wants to book me to speak, please get in touch. I've got lots to say. But I think email, Instagram, Facebook, I'm all over the place. You'll find me. Google me, you'll find me.
I'll link everything in the show notes for everybody to come and find you as well. Go and connect with Sarah. She's amazing. She gives so much value out on all of her channels. Someone that I'm proud to say is one of my business partners. So Sarah, thank you very, very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Speak to you soon.
Catch you later.